It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
You have to look at a change in circumstance, and is that change in the best interest of the child? You have to see what change has occurred. For example, and I hate to bring just negative, but for example, if there's a substance abuse issue, has the person gone through rehab? And has the person been consistent in staying off drugs? And how long has that been? Or is this, you know, 1 6 months she's off, 6 months she's on, 6 months she's off? You know, yes, there's a change, 6 months she's off, but is that going to be a consistent change? And that's what, when I'm, as a guardian ad litem, investigating, I look to see, is there a consistent change?
Private attorney Lynn Robinson explains what judges and lawyers look for in deciding to award, change, or not change child custody and visitation. And if you have more expenses, bills, and debts than income to pay them, you won't want to miss this week's question and answer session about surviving debt. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 41, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Job opportunity scams are on the rise. Instead of helping people make money, scam artists take money from them. Scam artists place ads in newspapers or on the internet promising good money and professional experience, but the jobs either are non-existent or very low-paying. The fraudulent companies often charge high fees for job information, training sessions, or promotional materials, and many victims end up losing thousands of dollars. In the Commonwealth, an organization called Virginia Employment Services has been operating in the Norfolk area, soliciting unemployed workers to pay for help in locating employment. The scheme misrepresents the services being offered and trades on a name substantially similar to the Employment Services of the Virginia Employment Commission. The organization has operated under other names and has been put out of business by the Ohio Attorney General's office. To avoid a job opportunity scam, don't pay to work. If a job is legitimate, you'll make money, not spend it. Don't pay a company for trying to help you find work. In other news, under current Virginia law, the poor debtor's exemption protects from your creditors $5,000 worth of household goods, $1,000 worth of clothing, medically prescribed health aids, $10,000 worth of tools and equipment needed for work or school, and $2,000 worth of a motor vehicle. In addition, every householder in Virginia can protect additional property by filing a homestead deed, but this exemption is limited during your lifetime to $5,000, a figure that has not been changed since 1977. Until now. The past session of the Virginia General Assembly passed new laws that increased the homestead exemption to $10,000 for householders who are 65 years of age or older, and increased the homestead exemption for veterans to $15,000. The new laws take effect July 1, 2009. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is motion to amend or review order. A motion to amend or review order is a court paper filed to change a court order, usually a child custody, child visitation, child support, or spousal support order. You may file this at any time after the prior court order. However, you must have a material or important change in circumstances or events since the prior court order was entered. On a motion to amend or review order, no one can bring up things that happened at or before the last court hearing. The parties can only bring up things that happened since the last court hearing. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and motion to amend or review order is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for this week's question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Carla from New Jersey.
Thank you, Carla. And what question do you have for us this week?
About the credit billing. I would like to know, now that I'm out of a job, how do I go about holding off on paying that credit card bill without it going into default?
Unfortunately, I don't have a really good answer for you. When you signed the credit card agreement, you agreed to pay interest at a certain interest rate, and that's a binding agreement. And as you know, you run a balance every month. The interest rate is applied to that balance, and the interest keeps going up. If you don't make a payment, there can be additional fees, late fees, over-limit fees, things of that nature. The first thing that I advise people to do in your situation is to not worry about your unsecured debts. You're in a situation like a lot of people where you have more expenses, bills, and debts than you have money to pay them. And in that situation, you have to pay your most important expenses and bills and debts first, your least important expenses, bills, and debts not at all. And that last thing that I just said, not at all, is probably the most important thing, because it's your money, whatever you have, and you get to decide how to spend your money. Your creditors don't get to decide how to spend your money. And obviously your most important expenses are food, shelter, utilities, ongoing medical care, insurance, things of that nature. Your credit cards, which we call unsecured debts, are probably your least important expense. So really, don't pay them first, pay them last, or not at all. Now, the interest is going to continue. What can you do? A couple of things you might want to do. If you're able to get a lower interest rate on some other credit card, then you could do a balance transfer. So if, for example, the interest is going up at 18% per year, which is not unusual, if you can find a card that offers an interest rate of 12% per year, and they will accept a balance transfer, that would be one possible solution. Indeed, the credit card companies are so eager for balance transfers, they will have no interest for a period of a month or two or three. And there are people who will just do a balance transfer, you know, every month or two or three from one zero interest introductory rate to another zero interest introductory rate. It's perfectly legal. No reason why you can't do it. But that's a temporary fix. It's not a permanent solution. The permanent fix, I think, is when you are reemployed and when you are able to make some payments, but not able to pay everybody in full, to seek out a reputable, licensed consumer credit counseling agency. And the Consumer Credit Counseling Agency will consolidate all of your credit cards, and I mean all, because it doesn't work unless they're all involved in the plan. All of your unsecured creditors are involved in the plan, into one payment. And you make one payment a month to the Consumer Credit Counseling Agency, and then they pay off your creditors. They may not pay them like 100%. It may be 70 cents on the dollar, 80 cents on the dollar, whatever. You see a lot of places that say, we can save you 75% on your credit cards. That's basically a lie. They can't do that. They're just trying to suck you in. The problem with the debt management plan is you only want to do it if you really can afford it. Obviously, you can't if you're unemployed or underemployed. And when you do go back to work and you do a debt management plan, if that's your choice, be sure it's really affordable and it lasts no more than 4 years, because otherwise it's just not going to succeed. I mean, even the best of plans, only 50% of them do work. But if you're really able to afford it, you can save hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on your credit card bills when the time comes. Is that helpful to you?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
Okay, very good. Best of luck to you. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the law office of Lynn Robinson, located at 8 West Lee Street. Lynn used to work for Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. She is now in private practice, concentrating on family law. Welcome to the show, Lynn.
Thank you.
Lynn, we're here to talk about modifying child custody and child visitation orders. I know you have extensive experience in that, not only as a private attorney, but also as a guardian ad litem. But as a starting point, let's begin with, how do these orders get established in the first place? What are the judges looking at? What factors do they consider?
The first thing is that the courts will look at what is in the best interest of the children. They don't look at what's in the best interest of the mother, the father, or whoever's filing the petition. And so you see the needs of the child and who is best able to meet the needs of that child. There are 10 factors that the courts will consider.
And which of those factors do you think carry the greatest weight with the courts?
It all depends on the case. Some factors apply and others don't apply. For example, one of the factors is the age, physical, and mental condition of the child, given due consideration to the child's developmental needs. If the child is healthy, then the court will say, okay, everything is fine with that, and they may go to the next one. The one factor is the age and physical and mental condition of each parent. Now, if a parent has had a nervous breakdown, if a parent is bipolar and not taking the medication, and it's affecting how that parent functions in life, then the court's really going to consider this person, perhaps at this point, it's not in the child's best interest to be with a parent that mentally is unstable and not in the best position to take care of the child.
Now, I know that many years ago, the courts had in Virginia what they called the tender years presumption, where it was assumed that a child of tender years, ranging from a few months to perhaps a few years old, there was essentially a presumption, a legal assumption, that that child belonged with the mother. Now, that was done away with in the law books. Do you find that that has been done away with in practice, that regardless of the age of the child, the mother and the father stand on an equal footing in a custody case?
Absolutely. As a guardian ad litem, my role is to investigate both the mother and the father and to determine what's in the best interest of the child. And again, the example that I said earlier about if a mother has some significant mental health issues, if a mother may be schizophrenic and could be harmful, her being around the child could be harmful to the child, then yes, we have to factor that in. And we look at each party's equally coming in to see really who is the best person to take care of the child. And I, as a guardian ad litem, I look at the place, the person's background, is there a criminal history, is there a history with Child Protective Services. I also investigate the home because I want to see what type of person, home the child would be living in. I investigate the neighborhoods. If the child is in school, I'll go up to the school and I'll say, does mom come up to the school? Does dad come up to the school? Does dad or mom call the school? If there's a problem, can you reach the parties? Who is most supportive of the teachers and the school? Who attends the parent-teacher conferences? I also look at any family involvement, family relations, like the what support system does each party have in place. And if the parties are working, what history they have in working, their health. I mean, there could be a problem, not just mental problems, but also physical problems, physical challenges that a parent may have. And so you have to consider physically, is this person capable of taking care of this child?
That sounds like a very thorough investigation that you would do as a guardian ad litem, that is a attorney appointed by the court to look after the best interest of the child. When you're in your other role, that is of an advocate for a party, do you find that other guardians ad litem are doing a similarly thorough investigation?
For the most part, yes. I would say probably about 99% of the guardian ad litems that I've encountered are doing a very thorough investigation.
And how much weight do you find the judges are giving to the recommendation or position of the guardian ad litem?
It's a big factor, but I've also learned that I also have to, if I'm representing a mother or a father, I have to put on my case.
Sure. So the guardian ad litem obviously makes a recommendation. The
Absolutely.
Final decision clearly is the judge's.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the factors that are listed is the reasonable preference of the child. If the court deems the child to be of reasonable intelligence, understanding, age, and experience to express such a preference. How often does the judge give any weight to the reasonable preference of the child, and what does the judge look at in determining whether the judge should even talk to the child at all?
Normally, the judge does not talk to the child. That's why the guardian ad litem are appointed. But you look at if a child is older, probably as a teenager from 12 on, you ask the child, and you try not to be divisive. You know, try like, do you like mom better? Do you like dad better? Which house would you rather stay in? But you ask questions about, tell me what you do when you're at mom's house. Tell me what you do at dad's house. Well, what's fun at mom's house versus dad's house? Now, the problem with that is that if you have a child that's staying with the dad throughout the week, then the child will say, I have more fun at mom's house, because she's a weekend mom. And the dad is the one that has to enforce the bedtime. The dad is the one that has to sit down with the child and go over his or her homework. And so it's not a fun time most of the time during the week. But mom has more free time and flexibility on the weekend, and she's able to take them to different places and have fun with them and not really be responsible for the homework. And that's most of the cases, not every case, but a lot of the cases. And so you have to ask, you investigate the home life, and you see what's the structure like when the child is at each individual's home. So if it's a teenager and this child is rebelling and mom is very strict and dad lets her do whatever she wants to do on the weekend, then I have to weigh that and saying, well, I could see why she would want to have more freedom and flexibility.
Now, when child custody has finally been established, how often do you find that it's just set and it's never brought up again in court? Would you say that happens most of the time or seldom? How often are there these petitions to modify a child custody or visitation order?
In personal experience, I would say probably about 35% will come back.
So a significant number of times there's going to be a change. And I assume this can be done pretty much until the time the child turns 18 years of age.
Yes.
So what types of changes in either the mom's life or the dad's life or the child's life do people bring to you to try to justify a change in custody or visitation? And I guess of those, which do you think are important enough to bring to the attention of a judge in a case for modification?
A lifestyle change. For example, one party got married. One party's lifestyle has changed. Maybe one a parent was had a substance abuse problem, and now they're no longer addicted to the drug.
And when you bring up a case like this in court, are you allowed to go back and rehash old issues, or are you limited in what you can present to the court?
Well, I think it's important to look at the past, because you have to look at a change in circumstance, and is that change in the best interest of the child? You have to see what change has occurred. For example, and I hate to bring just negative, but for example, if there's a substance abuse issue, has the person gone through rehab? And has the person been consistent in staying off drugs? And how long has that been? Or is this, you know, 1 6 months she's off, 6 months she's on, 6 months she's off? You know, yes, there's a change, 6 months she's off, but is that going to be a consistent change? And that's what, when I'm, as a guardian ad litem, investigating, I look to see, is there a consistent change?
And that's a good segue to the next question that I had, which is, how long is it reasonable to wait before petitioning a court for a modification? Again, in the non-extraordinary, non-emergency type situation.
I think the way the courts are, sometimes it could be months before you can even get a court date. So if there is a change in circumstance, I would encourage anyone to go and file.
Even if that change occurred, what, a week, 2 weeks, a month after the last custody order was entered?
I think that the courts would frown on that. But if it's something significant, before I would file, I would see if there is, if a guardian ad litem has been appointed, and even if the case is over, I would either consult your attorney if you hired one, or I would contact the guardian ad litem and saying, you know, this just happened. And then they can sort of gauge whether or not it's appropriate to bring it back.
Okay. And would you say that for the less time that's elapsed since the last child custody or visitation order, perhaps the more urgent the circumstance needs to be in order to really go into court again and try to get a change in custody and visitation?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess final question, how receptive do you find the courts to these petitions to modify custody or visitation? How often is the court actually willing to make a change in your experience?
Well, if there is truly a change, and the courts follow the law, if there is a change, and if that change is in the best interest of the child, for the most part, the judges are willing to change custody. But you also have to look at what time of year it is. This, for example, if you came in today to court, today is March, and if the child is in, say, for instance, Chesterfield schools, and the dad has the child in Richmond in school, and the mom lives in Chesterfield, you're looking at a drastic change for the child, and looking at changing them from two different school districts and with only 2 or 3 months left in the school year. So for the most part, most of the times, unless it's an emergency, the judges will usually just wait to the end of the school year and not do it right before school is getting ready to be.
That's very helpful. We have been talking with Lynn Robinson. She's a private attorney located at 8 West Lee Street here in downtown Richmond. We have been talking about child custody and visitation and the issue of modifying child custody and visitation. Thank you so much for being with us, Lynn.
You're welcome.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about changing a child custody or visitation order. The first tip is that once child custody or visitation has been set, it can't be changed unless there has been a material or important change in circumstances or events since the prior court order. Without this, the court is not very likely to amend or change the last order. The second tip is that you can't bring up anything that took place at or before the last court hearing. You can only bring up things that took place since the last court hearing. The third tip is that if there has been an important change since the prior court order, you would file a motion to amend or review order. You file this with the court that issued the last order. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Being the victim of a crime can be a difficult and overwhelming experience. Join us next week when Mary Vale Ware, director of the Criminal Injuries Compensation Fund, explains how victims of violent crime can receive awards of up to $15,000. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegman.